Matthew chapter 8, starting with verse 18, says, when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus replied, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Another disciple said to him, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. But Jesus told him, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Have we made it too cushy to follow Jesus? I'm just jumping right in. I'm just jumping right in today. There's no easing into it. We're going both feet into the deep end. Have we made it too cushy? In my observation, just things that I've observed, being around the church, working in the church, you know, we're very careful what we say to people. We don't want to be too offensive. We don't want to, you know, we want to make it easy to bring someone into a relationship with Jesus. We want to gently move them and ease them into it. You know, I've witnessed that. I've witnessed how we treat volunteers. We want to be very easy with volunteers. We treat them with kids' gloves because if you make a volunteer mad, if you upset them, if you offend them, what happens? They'll stop volunteering. But, you know, if they need to be somewhere else, someone needs to be able to say, you need to be somewhere else. And it just needs to, you know, but we're so cushy with things. We're so easy with things. We're scared to ask people to give things up for the kingdom. We don't always bring that up. You know, Jesus is awesome. The kingdom's great. You get eternal life, and then you have to give everything up. We don't. We're very cushy with that. Here in a few minutes, well, more than a few minutes, about a half an hour, we're going to have an invitation song. Did you know that the invitation song is a fairly modern application, fairly modern addition to the worship services. A century ago, 100 years ago, if you'd asked someone going to church, you know, how many decisions they had, they would give you a weird look. If we had a time machine and you could go back and you could be Bill and Ted, you know. Excellent. Be excellent to one another. But if you could go back in a time machine, 100 years, just 100 years, and you'd ask someone, they'd be coming out of a church service, say, how many decisions did you have today? They would just give you a weird look. So you're like, what? What are you talking about? The invitation song is another thing that we've got to kind of make things cushy. It was introduced because what it would do is it would elevate an emotional response in people where they would, you know, they'd be more prone to, it came from the big tent revivals in the 1850s. It would make people more prone to come forward, to get, you know, emotionally moved and come to the altar and, you know, in other denominations and in the Christian church to come forward and be baptized into Christ. Whatever their altar call was, that was what the invitation song would lead to. And in even modern times, it's a cushy part because everyone stands up. And everyone's distracted by a worship song so you can sneak forward and accept Jesus. And the thought of not having an invitation song at the end of a service is earth-shattering to some people. And the reason that I've been given on that is, what if someone wants to accept Jesus and we don't have an invitation song? If the absence of an invitation song is what keeps someone from acting on the Holy Spirit, moving them to the gospel message of Jesus Christ, then we're preaching the wrong gospel here. If that's what's going to keep them. And I'm not drawing lines in the sand. I'm not coming here. I'm not coming. My whole sermon's not proposing to get rid of the invitation song. That's not where I'm going. But I knew that would elicit, you know, some feelings and some emotion. And I want you to take that emotion. Let's bring it back up to your head for a moment. Where are those emotions coming from? It's this attachment we have to making things easy, to making things cushy, to following Jesus, to making that an easy road, when that's not what Jesus did at all. In fact, Jesus did quite the opposite And even the disciples followed his example as far as, you know, Peter at Pentecost. He did not preach a nice, cushy message. He preached an offensive message, a very direct message, a very personal message. He got in their stuff. And he didn't ask Thomas or Andrew or James to stand up and, you know, lead them in five stanzas of just as I am. Yet, 3,000 were baptized into Christ that day because the gospel was preached, and that was what drew people to God. And it wasn't preached soft. So my point is not to attack an invitation song, but rather to let us have a window into opening up the subject that we try to make it easy. We try to make it comfortable. We don't want to disagree too much. We don't want to do anything that would cause someone to run away. We don't want to chase someone away. But Jesus did the opposite. Jesus made it difficult. Jesus said it would require some things. That's not true, is it? He didn't say it would require some things. He said it would require what? Everything. All things. It requires great sacrifice. It requires great surrender. Jesus didn't portray following him as something that was comfortable or easy. But look how that's moved in 2,000 years. Our focus, really, if we're honest, we've tried to make that easy. We've tried to make that comfortable. In addition to that, there are a lot of other things that are part of this. We've got a consumer mindset that we live in here in America as the American church. We've got a consumerism mindset that if it's good, then it should be sold. And if you're not selling something to me, then why would I want it? And there's a lot of pressure on churches to be very attractional, to compete with this consumer mindset and to sell Jesus. And there's no wonder in this mindset why some of the more successful churches, the preacher at those churches, he appears to be just a really good salesman. Because we have this consumer mindset. And I want to be sold to. And that's one of the things I'm very excited to see the millennial generation move up, because the millennials hate to be sold to. So I'm excited to see that kind of, we might see some change there in the attractional method here. You know, we say that it's something you want. You want the kingdom. And the kingdom is awesome. No doubt about it. But there's a difference between persuading someone of truth, which is biblical, and luring someone to a decision by selling it to them. There's a difference there. And that difference has been quite blurred in our society, in our culture. And the church as a whole, nowadays, it strives to be attractional in competition with this consumer mind. Now, let me pause for a moment with a little disclaimer there. We are in competition. We're in competition for souls. And I applaud. I applaud, I encourage, I look forward to any creative element, any you know, out of the box or even in the box thinking. I like to think without a box. Just scrap the box, because sometimes out-of-the-box thinkers don't want to think in the box. Sometimes there are some good thoughts in the box. So I just scrap the box completely, and wherever the idea is, then if it's out of the box, out of the box, in the box, in the box, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. But I applaud creative ways of revealing God, creative ways of showing him to the world around us. The church should be creative. The church should be aggressive. The church should be moving forward. I'm not against that. But what I'm concerned about is this idea that instead of thinking that we're competing for souls, we're competing for attention. We're competing for attraction. And that gets down a dangerous road. That takes us to this road of making it easy, of making it cushy, of hiding the difficult things because people won't want to respond to those, and just sharing the things that are attractional, that are exciting. Gosh, it does a lot of things. Another thing you see in this consumer mindset is it makes certain followers of Christ feel inferior to share the gospel because they're not as eloquent as others. They're not as outgoing as others. They don't see where I'm going, because a lot of you guys feel that way because there's this pressure to sell. I'm not a salesman. I guess I can't be evangelistic. I can't make disciples. That's not how Jesus set it up. We're all to be evangelistic, every one of us, whatever your personality type is. The importance should be on the gospel message. The importance should be on the gospel message, and we should never veer from that message. Jesus said it's not easy. It's not easy. In fact, it's very difficult. And Jesus turned many people away by challenging them. We can't veer from that message and make it easy. That's wrong. It's not just frowned on. It's wrong. Jesus shared truth. He taught truth with authority. He didn't present the popular belief. He didn't go out to be politically correct. He was loving. He was full of grace. But he shared truth. And that's what was attractional. That's what is what people were drawn to. And people came to him just in huge crowds of people to follow Jesus. Not because he focused on bells and whistles. Not because he had balloons on every car in the parking lot. And a big monkey on the top, you know, like a big sales, used car sales. Okay. He had huge crowds of people following him because he shared truth with authority. In church, I think we feel like we have to compete with this attractional model. And the only way to compete with that is to make the gospel easy. And to make it easy goes completely against what Jesus taught and how Jesus presented the gospel. It's not easy. Jesus said, you have to leave everything. You have to leave everything. And it wasn't that Jesus didn't make it easy. He downright made it difficult. He said, foxes, they've got a place to rest, and then birds have a place to rest, but the Son of Man? Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, you got to understand that even your leader, even your king doesn't have a place to lay his head. Even your king doesn't have it easy. So don't come expecting it to be that way. Jesus' goal was not to receive grand proclamations of intent from his people. Jesus' goal was to have dedication and action from his people. In the text we looked at last week, when the first disciples followed Jesus, it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. We talked about that as evangelism. At once, they what? Left. They left their nets. Okay, that modern day translation, they left their job. They left their source of income. They left their source of security. That was a big, big deal. They left their family. It was a family business. We're going to see that in the verses to follow. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. And they were in a boat with their father, Zebedee. Happy Father's Day. Listen to this message. Preparing their nets, Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. There's an old preacher expression. I'm getting old enough to be able to use old preacher expressions. A little bit of white coming in. It's a preacher expression that's used most commonly to describe the union of marriage. In the beginning in Genesis, where it says that you will leave your father and mother and you will cleave to your husband or wife. Now it's, you know, you'll be united. But the old text, it used to say cleave. You would leave and cleave. And that was the term used. You would leave and cleave. And it was used to describe the relationship of marriage. You'd leave your father and mother, leave your parents, and you would cleave to your spouse. It's already up on the screen, isn't it? That's okay. Today we're going to use it for a different biblical relationship. And that is the relationship between a disciple and Jesus. Because this is what Jesus laid out. Jesus said, you leave and you cleave. It's a message of abandonment, leave it all, and dependence to cleave. If we're going to make disciples, this has to be our message. Because that was what Jesus' message was. It wasn't light, it wasn't easy. And yeah, some of you guys are thinking, isn't there a verse where Jesus says, my burden is easy, my burden is light, you know, my yoke is easy, something like that? Yes, yes, you're exactly right. Following him, being with him, he helps you through it, but it's not easy. The road, being a disciple, the dedication it takes, it's difficult. And Jesus never portrayed that as easy. You make the difficult choices, and the burden is easy. Okay, it's the load that he shares with you is light because he shares it with you. But giving things up, sacrifice, laying things down, that's not the easy part. That's the difficult part. Leave and cleave, abandonment and dependence. You leave your life. You leave your ambitions, you leave your dreams, you leave your path, you leave your plans. You leave your desires, your connections, your attachments, you leave them. That's the gospel. That's the gospel. You leave them and you cleave to Jesus. And this is why evangelism and discipleship, even a step beyond evangelism, is so difficult in America. We have so many attachments. We have so many things that we're attached to. This message of leave and cleave, I think we've moved past that and said, you know what? I'm never going to get anyone to follow Jesus with this message. So let's skip that and go to another part of the gospel that they might respond to. And we have a wavering church. We have a church full of, you know, the seed that we talked about last week that grows up among the rocks. They spring up quickly and they have no roots. And they wither and fade. We see a lot of people come forward. We've seen, I don't remember what the last count was. In the 12 years I've been here, I think 180 people that I've seen baptized, and about half of them I've had my hands in that somewhere. We have, what, 140 in service today. So if we only had the 180 that we baptized in the 12 years here, plus all of you, we'd be double the size we are right now. But we haven't made disciples. We haven't made disciples. Jesus taught to leave and cleave. Abandonment and dependence. And he taught that more than once. We already looked at two passages where he taught that, or where it was taught and where it was exemplified. We see this very plainly again in Matthew chapter 10. It says, anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. And then again in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. These are just passages in Matthew's gospel. I'm trying to stay consistent with the theme. I've got some other verses today I'm bringing in. But that's just Matthew's gospel. Messages like these are throughout the other gospels. The message of leave and cleave is illustrated, exemplified, shown, lived out by the church in the whole book of Acts. From cover to cover in the book of Acts. All the early Christians there, they practiced leave and cleave because it was a central part of the disciple-making message of the gospel. You leave and you cleave. It's abandonment and dependence. It's talked about, it's reiterated throughout the letters that make up the rest of our New Testament. Jesus' message of leave and cleave is not just a little something that he mentioned once and then it was forgotten. This is a central point of being a Christian, of being a disciple. To leave and to cleave. But is this how we present the gospel today? Is this how we present the gospel? It's not always presented that way. The emphasis has faded over the years. We've tried to make the gospel more attractive by making it easy. But it's not our kingdom. They're not our guidelines, rules, principles, morals, you know, to set and bend just to bring more people into the church building. These are expectations that Jesus set up for his church that he was building. To leave and to cleave, that's his message. Now maybe we don't share this message because maybe we aren't living it ourselves. We wouldn't want to ask someone to do something that we weren't already doing. That's super uncomfortable, isn't it? You have to leave everything and cleave to Jesus, but I'm going to hang on to most of my stuff. But this is what you should do. Do as I say, not as I do. Maybe that's why this message has faded through the years. Maybe it's because we, as his disciples, we're not leaving and cleaving. Maybe it's because we're hanging on to attachments or dreams or ambitions or things that are me oriented. And maybe we need this today because we can't make disciples. We can't make disciples if we aren't first disciples ourselves. So we talk about discipleship making disciples, which is what we've been told to do. Go and make disciples. We're not just to baptize believers. We're to make disciples. Now, baptizing believers is part of making disciples. But baptizing believers is not the umbrella. Making disciples is the umbrella. Baptizing believers is a part of that. He said, you go and you make disciples. And here's how you make disciples. You baptize them and you teach them. But the point that we are drawn to is you make disciples. And a core message of making disciples is you leave and you cleave. And if we're not disciples ourselves, how in the world can we ask other people to leave and to cleave? Follow me as I follow the example of Christ. That's in 1 Corinthians 11:1. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. 1 Corinthians 11:1. All ones. Easy to remember that. If you can just remember the book. 11:1. Let's write this down. Be the example. Be the example. Turn to your neighbor. Say, be the example. Turn to your other. Oh, goodness gracious. Leave and cleave, church. You guys are making it so easy. Be the example. I don't want to offend you. I don't want to chase you away. I want you to come back next Sunday. Turn and tell your neighbor like you mean it, like you're convicted of it. Be the example. Be the example. Be the example. Leave and cleave. See, and if you're going to be the example, it means investing in other people's lives. It means getting into other people's lives. You can't be the example just by standing across the road and shouting at your neighbor. Leave and cleave, brother! You can't do that. Turn or burn! That doesn't work. You got to cross the road. And you got to make a relationship. You have to build a relationship. The only way you're going to be the example for anybody in your life is to build a relationship with someone. To build that bridge. To grow in groups. Let me see here. I'm skipping this. Let's write that down. I'll go back to my notes a few minutes ago. Grow in group relationships. Let's write that down. Grow in group relationships. Jesus exemplified this. Jesus poured in to the lives of 12 men. Jesus came to earth to reveal himself, to show God to the world, to talk about, here's the kingdom, here's how you enter the kingdom, here's what the law was all about, here's God's intent for mankind. Here you go. He wanted to reveal that to the whole world. God so loved the whole what? World, we talked about we sung about his amazing love this morning. He loved the whole world that he sent Jesus to talk to just 12 men. You think about that? It would have made a little more sense if maybe Jesus would have gotten onto a sleigh with 8 reindeer and gone house to house, you know. Make, you know, who is it? It's Jesus. You don't know me yet, but give me a few minutes. He had the ability to do that. And that was what Satan tempted him to do in the desert. You know, put yourself up here so everybody can see you. And then, you know, all this. Jesus had a different approach because he knew a better approach than doing that. He didn't go door to door across the whole world from the age of 12 to 108. He took 3 years and he invested into 12 men. Yes, he had larger crowds that he shared with. Yes, he had larger crowds that he had an influence over. And yes, he had larger crowds that he taught and shared with and did miracles for and treated and loved and cared for and shared grace and talked about the kingdom. But he invested in 12 men because he knew this is how I'm going to reach America. Hundreds of years later, this is how I'm going to reach Australia. Hundreds of years later, this is how I'm going to reach Canada. This is how I'm going to reach Spain. This is how I'm going to reach Africa. This is how I'm going to do it. It's not through going to those places myself, but to investing in 12 men. He invested into a small group. He did that for us to exemplify. Here's how you grow disciples. Here's how you make disciples. This is what discipleship making is about. It's about growing in groups. It's about growing in groups. In addition to Jesus' wisdom and his life practice, the wisest man that walked on earth, he agreed with this group mentality. Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, he wrote, 2 are better than 1 because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if 2 lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can 1 keep warm alone? Though 1 may be overpowered, 2 can defend themselves. So he builds this argument about how 2 are better than 1. Then he goes with this one little shh. A cord of 3 strands is not easily broken. It's not quickly broken. Solomon says 2 are better than 1. 2 are better than 1. And to Solomon, 3's a crowd. It's a good thing. If 2 are better than 1, 3 are even stronger than 2. A small group, a group growth. Group growth. Many of us probably remember the story of Goldilocks. Do you remember that story? She wanders in, and it's a nice little child, you know, children's story about breaking and entering. Yeah. She breaks into this bear's house, you know, and she sees the porridge, and one of them's too hot, and the other one's what? Too cold, and the other one's right in the middle. It's just right. Yeah, so now she's breaking and entering and stealing. Eating their porridge. Then she goes and she sees a chair. She sits in one chair, and it's too big. And she sits in another chair, and it's too big. And she sits in another chair, and it's what? You think it was, but then she broke it. So really, the middle chair, that was just right. There you go. That's where I was going. Breaking, entering, stealing, vandalism. It's just not looking good. I hope Goldilocks is 17 or younger, because then it won't go on a record, you know, for life. So not good. And then she gets to the beds, and one of them's too firm, and one of them's too, and the other one's just right. So what in the world does this have to do with disciple making, discipleship? Well, when we're going to grow in groups, you've got too small and too big. You've got too small. You can't grow alone. That's too small. You can't grow alone. Let's write this down. Wherever it is in my notes. There it is. Discipleship does not happen on your own, alone. We cannot expect someone to make a lifelong commitment to Jesus, to be baptized into him on a Sunday morning, and then just to leave him out to dry. No pun intended. Because they were wet when they got, yeah, okay. Yeah, where's Jim when I need him? We have to involve them in a group. You have to get them into a group. There's a time and there's a purpose to be alone. Jesus got alone with God often. And we need our alone time. That is very important. We need our alone time. We need personal Bible study. We need personal time with God in prayer to develop that relationship. But that's not discipleship making. That's our relationship with God. To make disciples, we need groups. That's what Jesus did. Discipleship does not happen alone. It does not happen in a singular environment. It happens in a group environment. So alone is too small. Even a mentorship is too small. There's something that happens when you get a larger group of people together, a medium group of people together, because just like the chairs, one is big, too big, one apparently was too small once you get to the latter part of that section of the story. So there's too small, but there's also too big. Let's write this down. Disciples don't happen in large group settings. Making disciples does not happen here on a Sunday morning. It can't happen just going to a church service. Making disciples can't happen by just going to a seminar. I don't care how good the keynote speaker is. That's not where discipleship making happens. It doesn't happen in a seminar or a Christian convention. It doesn't happen by listening to preachers online. Now, those are good in their area. Jesus used large group settings, didn't he? Yes, there's an application for that. And just like the too small for discipleship making, there's a place for that, that personal relationship with God, that one-on-one contact. We need that. We need small, but that's not discipleship. We need large, but that's not where discipleship happens either. You can teach large groups of people in a large group setting, and that's great. You can do that through seminars. You can do that through a church service. You can do that through online preaching. But that's not discipleship. That's not making disciples. That's too big. You have to have the group that's what? Just right. And that's small groups. That's growth in small groups. We're in the midst of getting a small group together again ourselves. And one of the people I've been talking to about that, I got feedback through my wife. They said, you know what? Dusty's enthusiasm about the small group just made me kind of want to do that. And I didn't know that they didn't want to. But in this message, working on my heart and being reminded, you know what? That is where it happens. We don't have a lot of that here. We've got some Sunday schools, which is great. That is a small group, is a Sunday school. Everyone in this church should be in a small group of some sort. Either be a small group or a Sunday school. We need it. We need it for ourselves to grow and to grow as a disciple. We need it to make disciples. We need to be able to make disciples. We need to be able to invite someone when they come forward and accept Jesus. We need to be able to invite them into a group, to put them into a group that they're going to fit with and mix with to help them to grow. And when those groups get too big, this is the sad part. This is what's tough. And this is what one of the other small groups I was in, we didn't do this. And I think we lost some of what we could have been. You have to split. You have to make the small group into two small groups because the group can get too big and then you're too big. And so it's got to be this understanding of this is how we are making disciples. Discipleship making, it takes time. It's a process. It's not an overnight thing. This is not a note. I selected certain things, but this is a little extra. Making disciples is not fast food. It's not, boom, it's going to happen. Making disciples is investing and taking time. Jesus did life together with these 12 men. He walked with them, talked with them. He was everywhere. They went with him. He invested 3 years, 1,000 days, over 1,000 days with these guys. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. And there's not a cookie cutter thing to it. It's not something where we can come and say, well, I'd like to do a small group, but I'd like to have a program. I'd like to have and there are certain ways you can do different structure. And I think structure is very positive and very good. But if we're really going to take it just down to grassroots, Everybody's different, and every small group's going to be a little bit different because you got different people in a different small group. And really, the guideline is Jesus' teaching. The guideline is the gospel message and the truth therein. And you just do everything you can to help your group grow in that direction. That's the guideline. That's the structure. I believe it can be that simple. Get a group of people together that you can grow with and mix with and grow. And just use Jesus' teachings. That's what the disciples used. That's what the early church used. In Acts 2, which hopefully we'll be able to get to that in some of our Sunday schools coming up. Key passage on how they got together on a regular basis. They did life together. Had one of the members of the new small group share with me about how they're doing a project in their yard. And they're like, man, this is it's killing me. And I said, you got a small group now. You got a group. Let's have one meeting, and then the next meeting, let's come help you with your flower beds. Oh, I like this idea. You do life together. You live together. You work together. You serve together. That's what Jesus did. It's active ministry together. So write this down. And this one's quick, so we'll be out of here in a minute. In closing, Jim's favorite words. Active ministry together. This is how Jesus grew disciples. This is how he grew disciples. Teaching opportunities. Anytime you have a chance to learn and teach and grow from each other, then you take it and you do it. And that's what Jesus did. Teaching opportunities. What do? You make disciples. You baptize them and you... What? Something that happens in church. What? You make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and Son, and the Holy Spirit, and there we go. Really, it's still kind of bashful. Teaching. You teach them to obey everything that Jesus commanded. So you just take the opportunity to use any moment to be a teaching moment. And learn and grow together. And teach together. Study and share. Take that study outside the group and teach others. Service opportunities. Serve together. Not just to have a small group that enjoys being together, that enjoys eating together, laughing together. And that's a part of small group. But that's not what's going to grow disciples. That's not the only part that's going to grow disciples. That's going to allow the relationships to grow. But then you grow disciples by teaching and serving. By teaching and serving. That's what Jesus did. Discipleship making. To leave and to cleave and to teach that and to do it ourselves, to be the example, to grow in group relationships, not too small, not too big, but just right. And to participate in active ministry together, teaching opportunities, service opportunities, discipleship. This is Jesus' ideal for the church. This is a priority for Jesus, for his church, is to make disciples. It's a very important thing for us to make every effort to get that right. So I pray that we take this seriously today, as this is a subject that I don't see a lot of this happening in America. And we need it. The kingdom needs it. So please be in prayer about this for our church, for you and your involvement. Go back and review some of these scriptures and take these notes seriously. Discipleship.